News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. Good to have you along this this hour and this final hour of Mobile Mornings. 251-343-0106 if you want to text the show or if you want to call the show. Feel free, either way.
And we got a lot to get into this hour. Rob Hulbert joins us in the second half of the hour. We'll also give away another pair of tickets to see The Guess Who at Sanger Theater next month. Dan and I behind the scenes here. Doing a little Wikipedia dive into not just the Guess Who, but also Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
Yeah, kind of an offshoot of the Guess Who, right?
Mm-hmm. And the current members of Bachman-Turner Overdrive. Some interesting stuff there. Maybe we can get to that at the end of the hour. But something we haven't had a whole lot of time to discuss, because the bulk of the discussion regarding this Alabama legislative session.
Gambling.
That's right. Chips are in. I'm trying to think of more gambling puns.
And even though you were talking about medical marijuana, that's a re-emerging story, right?
Right.
But school choice.
School choice and gambling were the two big things coming in.
Yeah.
The IVF, of course, took over a week or two.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other legislation out there as well. And I want to get into some of that. Some of it interesting. Some of it sounds pretty cool. But let's start with this cannabis commission thing, because from the get-go, this has just been, I'm sure, a nightmare for some of the people involved. But when we talk about the state getting involved in gambling regulation or any other industry that they want to control, just keep this in mind, what has gone on with the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission. So, of course, you know, they awarded licenses. Was it early last year the first licenses were awarded? I can't remember at this point. They've awarded licenses three separate times. There have been lawsuits for each round from companies that applied to win or earn a medical marijuana license but didn't get in. And lawsuits every round have been filed. So remember, there's different levels of these licenses. They've got people that are just licensed to grow the medical marijuana, people licensed to transport it, some people licensed to only sell it from dispensaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have folks licensed to do all of it, basically, from seed to customer. So
security, I guess.
That's exactly right. Transport and security.
Security, yeah.
And so they're still going through these lawsuits right now. Right now, in Montgomery County Circuit Court, the Alabama Court of Civil Appeals has stayed all of the court proceedings, which means no one is getting any work done as far as medical marijuana is concerned in the state. That is until the circuit court rules on a motion to dismiss that was filed by the Cannabis Commission. This was all set to go down next month and still is. Initial briefs aren't due until April 1st. A hearing on the matter won't be scheduled until at least April 16th. But the initial plan was to get medical marijuana rolled out across the state, I think by spring of this year was the initial date. That is clearly not going to happen. And the legislature decided, hey, we're going to come back from spring break and we're going to try to fix this problem and get medical marijuana rolling. There was the pun. I was trying to avoid puns. That was non-intended. So State Senator Tim Melson, he spoke with the Alabama political reporter, Josh Moon, and Moon has this report out from yesterday. Melson said he's optimistic that legislation that would expand the number of integrated licenses available from the state will be introduced shortly after spring break, and they're hoping that brings an end to what Moon calls the legal logjam that has delayed the distribution of medical marijuana to Alabamians. Melson did not discuss specifics of the proposed legislation. Nothing now has been finalized, and they're still working through all the possibilities. But Moon did speak with one source that's apparently familiar with one draft of the legislation. He said lawmakers are discussing expanding the number of available integrated licenses from the current number of 5 to somewhere between 9 and 15. Josh Moon says that would essentially allow the state to issue licenses to all companies that could meet all of the other requirements under Alabama's laws. And then you have the lawmakers and attorneys who are representing the companies who were denied licenses. They said, oh, if that expansion happens, that would end many of the lawsuits currently pending against the AMCC. So kind of holding that over the head of the Cannabis Commission, these lawsuits, and saying, hey, if you just let us in, we won't cause a problem. We'll end all of this. But while they if this passes, plan to expand the number of licenses given out from 5 to between 9 and 15 companies. This is particularly for integrated licenses. I'm sure it'll come up for the others as well. They're going to, at the same time, limit the number of dispensaries. And that's in order to get the votes to get this through the legislature. Because, well, they said some legislators fear that an abundance of the product would flood the state. So the fix, they say, is necessary because of the seemingly never-ending legal issues surrounding the licensing process. Lawsuits have focused on a variety of errors, including a scoring process, which was, I believe was done by the University of South Alabama.
Yes, it was.
The AMCC admitted that process was seriously flawed.
Right.
No telling how much money has been wasted throughout this whole thing as well. There were also multiple violations of the state's Open Meetings Act, and lawsuits have been filed accusing the commission and its staff of providing more favorable treatment for certain applicants and mistreatment of others. So their fix here would be, okay, all of you who have a gripe, who are upset you didn't get awarded licenses, who keep suing us time and time again, we're going to give everyone licenses, but everyone gets fewer dispensaries. Mm-hmm. So the companies that earned the licenses this last go around, they were looking at, I don't know what the numbers are, but they're looking at a certain number of dispensaries, which would mean a certain amount of money coming in. And this could potentially limit that. It's just, I don't know if it's necessary. It sounds like the legislators think it's necessary, but it just goes to show how screwed up this whole thing has been from the beginning. And through all of this fight, all of this money spent, the state wanting to retain control of this industry, mm-hmm. just like they do with the beverage, yep. ABC, Alabama Beverage Control. Same thing they want to do with gambling. And it's not out of, you know, character for state governments to want to control all of that. But this has been a nightmare from the very beginning. And yep. now they're saying, okay, let's just let them all in. Do they think there won't be more lawsuits? Like, if they do this, won't there be other companies who were maybe interested in applying for licenses, but they thought there were only going to be this many given out? They see everyone else on the board and they say, oh, we're not.
This wrangling is far from over. And I think the people most affected by that, Dalton, were the folks who, like you said, were already doing the math. You know, I'm not a businessman, never have been one, but I would imagine if you're in this, you are a business person already, and now you're in this business, okay? And now you're starting to calculate, hey, this is going to, here's my overhead, mm-hmm. here's the price of whatever we're going to produce or the service we're going to do, and we are going to make X amount of money.
Right.
Now you've got that completely slashed by the new concept, right?
Right.
So they keep making people blanked off. And these are, I've heard, and I would also suppose some of these people are pretty powerful people who generally mm-hmm. get the bid or get their way or whatever, and they're not happy about it.
Oh, no, they can't be. So it's just another thing here. Now, Gardner says, does the Marijuana Commission meet in public or, I think he says, behind closed doors? And that's, well, there's a lot of these meetings were supposed to be in public. Hmm. I guess. And some of these meetings were held behind closed doors. I think they started holding more of the closed doors meetings after that first round when all the lawsuits came out and you had the scoring process that was bungled from the start.
You know, if you smell the smoke of marijuana around town, we were talking about that the other day.
Yeah, Operation Up in Smoke.
That could be a meeting. That could be one of one of their meetings we've come across.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane. And if what Josh Moon's reporting, which it sounds accurate, and he's got quotes from Tim Melson and others, just another turn here. And where we are, whether you believe medical marijuana or recreational marijuana should be legal or not legal, you got to admit, this has just been completely messed up from the start.
Anything else that you noticed, the kind of under-discussed legislation that maybe we should put a light on?
Yeah, so this is one that came up yesterday in some news articles. Now, remember, this kind of began down here in Mobile this last year. And now you've got the group of 10 mayors, the mayors of Alabama's 10 largest cities who have officially endorsed a bill that will increase the penalty for firing a gun into an occupied home or vehicle or business. The mayors cited two tragedies in particular. Both happened in January. Mm-hmm. One was a 15-year-old girl who was shot and killed during a road rage shootout on 165 in Mobile.
Yeah.
And then that injured a 9-year-old there. And then you had the fatal shooting of a 5-year-old boy who was getting his hair cut in Bessemer.
Hmm.
Both instances where someone was shooting into, at this point, it was an occupied vehicle in Mobile and occupied an occupied building. Business yep. in Bessemer. But we've seen time and time again people firing shots just into houses and into unoccupied vehicles very often.
And often you don't get names because they're youth.
Yeah, juveniles.
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 So you have, think about how many of these cases we've had where maybe 4 people are involved and one name is released because mm-hmm. there's only one person that happens to be 18 in that grouping. Or there's no names released because of their juvenile status.
And this bill would up the charges. It was Representative Barbara Drummond who, she filed the bill, I believe.
She did. I mean, good for her.
Yeah, it would increase the penalty for, I think, shooting into an occupied vehicle from a Class B felony to a Class A felony. One of them was a B felony, one's a C felony. Both would be upgraded to A felonies
right.
for shooting into these occupied dwellings or
That's
vehicles.
Right.
And B felony carries sentences of 2 to 20 years. Class A felonies, sentences of 10 years to 99 years or life. And the Big Ten mayors, of course, you have Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, you have Woodfin out of Birmingham, Battle out of Huntsville, and Tuscaloosa Mayor Walt Maddox, Montgomery Mayor Stephen Reed, Madison, Hoover, Dothan, Decatur, all of Auburn, all of them agreeing that this bill needs to pass. I think it's probably got the momentum and it's going to see a lot of yes votes, especially since it was introduced by a Democrat member of the House.
Yeah, I agree. And I like what Barbara said that day, too. She was very forceful about it. And here's the thing. This will, if you're not aware of it, as bad or crazy as it's been in Mobile, maybe, of course, the stats say that crime was down this past year because we just hit an apex somewhere around 2022 or 21 and 22.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really bad. Birmingham, this whole time, has been much worse and is not getting any better right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Birmingham is in the state of Alabama. There is your leader for sure in murders, and it's not even close.
There have been crimes in Birmingham that wouldn't be out of place if you saw it was happening in, you know, Haiti or somewhere like that, especially
mm-hmm.
this most recent one where, I think, was it 8 different men who did terrible things to a woman before killing her?
Oh, gosh,
I
yes.
don't even want to get into it. But,
yeah.
So it's obviously a major, major issue, and the legislature taking their hand at trying to at least make some of those penalties more severe.
Yeah, and... You know, like you say, a Democrat leads that charge, and good for Barbara Drummond. Probably need to get her on our show.
And you know how we have a back-to-school tax holiday, also severe weather tax preparedness holiday? They're looking at passing more tax holidays for other things. I'll tell you what those things may be when
okay.
we come back.
All right. Also, the whistleblower in that Boeing case and his suicide. We'll talk about it. It's 819, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by the fine folks over at the local personal injury law firm, Tobias and Comer Law. They've been doing a great job for folks all along the Gulf Coast for decades. In that office down on Dolphin Street, they'll help guide you through your case from the time you first talk until it's over. The entire team there at Tobias and Comer Law, just great people. Whether you're talking to Desi Tobias, Brian Comer, Lacey Smith, or anyone else there, they can help you out. From car to boating accidents, defective products, workplace accidents, maritime injuries, Tobias and Comer Law has seen it all. And you should vote for them today in the nappies. They're up for several categories, including Best Personal Injury Attorney and Best Personal Injury Law Firm. And I know last year, Brian came very close to winning Best Mobilian in the nappies. So vote for him in the nappies. Also, check him out online at TobiasComerLaw.com.
What's going on? What's that other legislation that you were looking at?
So we've got the back-to-school tax holiday. I think that comes around once a year. You've got
August or July.
Severe weather preparedness tax holiday. It's mm-hmm. where they give you from Friday to Sunday to go out and get things state tax-free four items you'll definitely need if that event arises. Well, one bill sponsored by a representative out of Auburn, Joe Lavorne, would make camping and hunting gear, boats and boating equipment, and other outdoor supplies exempt from state sales tax 2 weekends per year. It would create the Alabama Adventure Awaits sales tax holiday. That's one of several bills pending in the legislature to reduce the sales tax on certain items or exempt them altogether. Lavorne said that the new proposed new tax holiday came in part from findings by Innovate Alabama, who are a public-private partnership to support entrepreneurs and development in the state. He said, we were looking at why people want to come to Alabama and stay in Alabama, and the number one thing that kept coming back to us was the great recreational opportunities that we have here. He started thinking about ways we could look at getting people outdoors and buying outdoor supplies sales tax-free for a couple weekends. I guess that would make a pretty good movement towards that. It would include boats and ATVs, boating and water activity supplies, camping supplies, sports or recreational equipment, fishing supplies, firearms and ammunition, gun safes, and hunting supplies. I have a feeling they're going to rip this little thing apart before it makes it all the way through like that. But interesting. Now we just need them to pass like a broadcaster sales tax preparedness or something so we can get some headphones and microphone sales tax free.
Flare pens.
Pens.
Hey, so the story out of Charleston, South Carolina. This is really interesting because in this story, they're really humanizing this whistleblower named John Barnett, mm-hmm. whose nickname happened to be Swampy. He lived in Louisiana. I think he retired there after he left Boeing. So he was the whistleblower, main whistleblower. Looks like there's a lot of whistleblowers out there, actually.
Yeah.
People who are not fans of the work being done at Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was in between depositions over the weekend, and this was his final day to be testifying. And according to his attorney, Robert Turkowitz, he's known this guy for like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was in pretty good spirits. And he was also, he was really glad to be finally getting the whole story out on the record. Turkowitz said, I think it was cathartic for him. So on the first day of the deposition, that would have been Friday, Swampy had he did very well because no one knew more about his case than he did. But when it came to time for Swampy's own legal team to take over questioning, he began to wear thin now because he had to come up on all these minute details over the, and it's been 6 years since they started all this, and he's no longer at Boeing. And anyway, but he seemed like he was in pretty good spirits. At 6 p.m. they adjourned. Okay, we'll pick it up again tomorrow. Then, which is interesting about this too, Swampy was going to drive home to Louisiana. Why was he going to drive home?
Was that drive going to come after his final day?
After the final day, yeah.
Why was he going to drive home?
He was going to drive home because he didn't trust flying.
Wow.
An engineer he was on the line at Boeing. He was in the safety department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was quality control.
Yeah, quality control.
Engineer.
There was anyway, he was found dead in the Holiday Inn on the Savannah Highway there in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. After picked up some Taco Bell, went to his hotel room, got in his car the next morning. It seems like, you know, why would you get in your truck, rather, unless you were about to go where you're going?
Hmm.
And evidently, about 9:30 that morning, someone pulled a trigger.
Yeah.
Maybe it was him.
And, you know, that's what the medical examiner's office said, that it appeared to be him. But it's not a far stretch for conspiracies, right? Or for conspiracy theories.
This attorney known this guy 7 years, but, too.
Yeah, and he's had 7 years to talk. And you mentioned there's a lot of whistleblowers. You know, would Boeing or someone connected go out and do that when, hey, the whistle has been blowing for 7 years now? There's all kinds of information out there.
Yeah.
He's been bearing his soul for that amount of time. I think David mentioned yesterday, it's possible he did this as an effort to maybe bring even more attention to the case.
Mm.
But what he started blowing the whistle on here, Barnett or Swampy, was regarding the 787 Dreamliner jets. And someone noted yesterday, while Sean was talking about this, the movie Broken Dreams about the Boeing 787, and it was an Al Jazeera documentary, and some audio there where I think they had like an undercover camera
at a plant.
It sounded like it was in the South. I guess it was Charleston.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And this reporter goes around asking the people who are working on the parts there, hey, would you fly in a Boeing Now, this was 7 years ago. Hey, or 9 years ago now. Would you fly in a Boeing? No way, man. That's 10 of the 15 said they would not fly on the planes that they were working on in wherever they were. So,
how about Swampy described to his attorney at the time his team had been taken off a job finding 300 defects on a section of the fuselage. So they find 300 defects, quality control, and taken off the job.
And I think a lot of this comes from Boeing outsourcing a lot of the work to a bunch of different countries.
Yep.
Imagine quality control where you've got things coming from who knows where.
Incredible.
Yeah.
830 FM Talk 106.5. Rob Holbert from Lanyap Mobile is on the way. Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, name of our show. Thanks for all the texts, 251-343-0106. And I would say you can call us, but you can't, because Rob Holbert from Lanyap Mobile has already done that, and he's joining us on the line right now. Good morning, Rob.
Done it, man.
So, Rob, how upset are you about this whole TikTok thing that's going down? I guess we could start with that.
I have mixed feelings about it. I'm someone who does not do the tickety talk, but my wife does a lot, so I look at a lot of dog videos, which, you know, that can be kind of annoying at times. So, you know, there's people at work who show me those things as well. Really, but I will also say, we've gotten a lot of really good recipes off of TikTok.
You mean dogs cooking? What's the...
No, they have recipes on there. Okay. There's some really good stuff, man.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I'm not sure where I stand on all this. And you've got people saying it's a move to get rid of other websites and apps. And then, of course, you have the Chinese factor into this and whether they are spying on us. But for me, what made this story was all of the TikTokers showing up in D.C. yesterday. It was like if they were trying to ban the circus.
Yeah,
and you had all of the members, the entertainers from the circus show up in D.C. at one time.
Yeah, it's like the carnival bus broke down and everybody spilled out, and there they were.
Well, I mean, look, I'll just say, you know, whenever I buy something online, it shows up everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I feel like sometimes when I mention a product around my phone, it starts showing up. I feel like I'm already being spied on a little bit. I'm not really super worried about. I don't know what the Chinese want from me. I doubt there's a whole lot they're going to get. It feels a little bit like going after one thing when there's a whole lot of other issues. But that's just me personally.
Speaking of a lot of issues, the Alabama legislature, they get spring break this week, so good for them.
Yes.
But back in action next week.
Oh,
and your cover story is about one of the main topics this year, and that's school choice.
Yeah. So they got... bill gone have passed, and you know, it's going to, there are people who are pretty excited about this. There's money for students for the first couple of years. It's going to be at a certain economic level, but then after that it takes off for everybody. Puts money aside if you want to go to a private school. Doesn't require the private schools to take anybody, doesn't, you know, so there's you know, question of what that's going to do. And, you know, that's the big issue, is people arguing over what the future of it is. I know that RSA came out the other day and said, hey, you know, I don't think it's a good idea down the road, because he's worried about there being fewer teachers to prop up the retirement system. But, you know, I guess that's his particular concern. But you know, I guess we're just going to have to see how it works. I think a lot of people will like the opportunity to get their kids out of school districts that aren't doing very well.
A couple of things, Rob. How many private schools are going to opt in, number one, or they like it just the way it is, just fine? Number two, when you think about those applicants, those particular students, you know, they may offer something to the school. Because, I mean, if their parents are serious enough
to move them out
to
a different school,
there's a different level of responsibility, I think, in that household. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, when you're talking about people who are interested enough, and look, I'm sure there are plenty of people who are very interested who just don't have the means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think those folks who are going to do it probably are, as you're saying, maybe folks who are more involved with their kids' education,
right,
and concerned about it. And so, you know, I think that's, they probably will be better students, I would assume, you know, that are moving out of that, if schools want to take them. You know, that it could lead to the creation of some new schools. I mean, there are a lot of different philosophies or theories on what's going to happen out there, and I don't think we're going to know entirely for a little while.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see whether the state can do this, right? We were talking about the Cannabis Commission and how much they've screwed that up, and if you're looking at individual students and how much is owed to individual people and which schools are in, which schools are out, is it my fault that I don't have a whole lot of faith in the state in doing that correctly?
You know, it's not, but it also, I find it somewhat amusing that in a state where, you know, where every time you turn around, people are saying, you know, get government out of my life. I don't want government taking care of this stuff. This is a reapportionment. This is a take some money from government, you know, government taking money from people and giving it to other people. And everybody's kind of excited about that. So I think somewhere along the line, it just kind of sometimes seems a little ironic how what things we embrace and what things we don't.
Yeah, that is the truth if I've ever heard it. And I know Ivy was probably really happy to get out her pen and sign the school choice bill. Up next would be gambling. We'll see if she'll sign whatever makes it out. And we talked some last week about how the Senate basically ripped the House's bill in half. And completely different looking scenario now as it heads back to the House and they come back from spring break.
Yeah, it is a massive, massive chasm between the two sides at this point. And you know, the side that the House had, I had problems with just some of the restrictions on it, and I think if it passed it was likely to head into that same area as the Cannabis Commission with trying to restrict and do certain things that are going to create problems. But the Senate bill to me is a total disaster. They should shoot that thing. It's terrible. I mean, it's garbage. Mm-hmm. I think it, you know, you're talking about it locks in. I mean, Mobile will only be able to have a casino at the dog track. It basically gives PCI the only casinos with table gambling. So it creates a total division between what somebody else can come in and do and what they're doing. There's just a number of things with that one that I just think it's the same old junk. They pulled all the sports betting out. Table games are out. It is just kind of a real wreck. I don't know why we would want that.
PCI.
And also it brings in less than half the money the other one was supposed to bring in. So it's just another situation where they've watered it down to, I think, you know, once again, curry favor with certain special interests, and it doesn't look good. I don't know how they're going to get those things together, but if it's a Frankenstein of those two, I don't think it's going to be very good.
Yeah, and they're acting like they have to pass a lottery in order to regulate the illegal gambling that's already going on in the state.
God. Well, don't even get me started on that one, too. I mean, that is, you know, this is some sort of moral that we have to pass this gaming to stop illegal gambling, but we're not going to have sports betting, so...
Well, you know, you got those illegal turtle racing going on in Talladega.
I'm just saying, in town, are breathing a sigh of relief, right? You know,
it's absolutely completely different look than what passed the House, and after it made it through the Senate the last, you know, two times that they talked about it, you were thinking, oh, good chance. But of course, a lot of new state senators in there who obviously don't feel the same way. Let's bring it back home here, Rob, and Mayor Sandy Stimson with a. Bit of a coy social media post with the Mobile Civic Center as it currently stands in the background. I think you said something like something big is coming soon. Well, that announcement later today, this afternoon, they're going to tear it down? They're going to just redevelop what's already there? It looks like tearing down is the option they're going with.
I think they're going to tear it down, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's what's coming. You can check us out a little later today. You'll see the whole story. We'll have it. But yeah, I think that's where it's going, and because the renovation, as they got into it, started looking really, really expensive, and getting closer and closer to just the price of just redoing the whole thing. And so, you know, why fix it and have a lot of still
old problems,
have a lot of issues still there, and not, and just rather than get something brand new.
Yeah, get something brand new.
Instead
of dealing with a bunch of old problems, you know, get a group in there that can build a brand new, and then we'll have a bunch of brand new problems that we didn't see coming.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's they will be, yeah, but they will be, you know, at least they won't be maintenance problems, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know?
You would hope not.
Built the government plaza.
Exactly.
And Mardi Gras organizations going to be upset either way, I think, for the next couple of years.
You know, the Mardi Gras organizations, some people may get upset because it's going to be displaced for a few years, a couple of years. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to have a better facility. You know, it may be a pain for a couple of years. But Mardi Gras it's been around for a long, long time, and it will be around for a long, long time. So this will just be a dot for a couple of years. I'm sure it will be hard for a couple of years while it's being built, but other than that, it should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Rob, where do you come down on the guest on the Jeff Ford Show later on this morning? Pretty much a national figure at this point, for sure, and that would be Katie Britt and her speech that followed up Joe Biden the other night and everything that's come since.
You know, it was not what I expected. It was overly dramatic. It was, I thought she would do a more straight type of thing. You know, I remember long ago when I worked on Capitol Hill, walking through when I was working for then Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, and he was preparing a speech. It was supposed to be a humorous speech, and he was surrounded by three very unfunny people, and they were coming up with some ideas, and I walked by and thought, this is going to be a disaster, and it was.
Wow.
And, you know, so I think, and you know, he wasn't fresh out of the box like she is.
Okay? Yep.
He was there, had been there for decades.
Sure.
So I think sometimes maybe you get in that bubble, and maybe people are saying, that sounds good, that's good. I don't know. I don't think it was the right tone. You know, is it the end of the world for her? No, it's not. And I think she'll be fine. She'll weather it. You know, I feel personally a little bit misled by the whole story about the woman at the border? Yeah. I mean, when I listened to her, I thought she was saying that she had spoken to this woman and this was something that had happened recently.
Hmm.
So, you know, it came off a little misleading to me, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to really affect her tremendously. And hey, she got Scarlett Johansson to play her on Saturday Night Live. It could be a lot worse.
No kidding. I mean, I think she even commented on that. Like, pretty cool.
Yeah, she was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, at least it wasn't like John Candy or something. You know? I mean, or like John Goodman, rather. You know,
if John
the trip all the time, you know, it could be pretty brutal.
Yeah. Goodman's looking pretty svelte these days, so I don't know if that's
he is,
the.
He is. I don't think he could pull off Katie Britt.
I really liked Ashley Trice's take on the Katie Britt thing and her hidden agenda this week, which
she did a great job with it.
And folks can check that out. Also, yours, Damn the Torpedoes, and all this great news that you guys are pushing out at Lanyap. Latest issue on stands now. And as always, I encourage people to sign up online.
Well, thanks. Yeah, guys, if you're interested, folks can go to lanyapmobile.com. It's $1 for the first month. It is $1.50 a week after that. It helps keep investigative reporting going on in your town. And, you know, I think we're one of the few newspapers left in the state in the big city. So it helps us keep going.
Thanks a bunch, man. Appreciate you coming on with us every week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right. Rob Holbert there, Lanyap. Check them out online, lanyapmobile.com. And, of course, vote nappies. Currently the nominating period for the nappies. I think that goes through the 21st, maybe a week left of that. VoteNappies.com. We would love your nominations
for
FM Talk 106.5 under the media category. Just pick and choose there what you want to fill out. Also, right now, time to give away another pair of tickets.
We're going to buy your votes.
We're going to buy it. That's exactly right. This is just straight through and through election interference. The Guess Who coming to Mobile Sanger Theater on April 12th. Right now, caller number 4 at 251-343-0106. Caller number 4 picking up a pair of tickets to see The Guess Who. Again, that show April 12th at Sanger Theater. And you can buy your tickets online, Ticketmaster.com. They're also available at the box office when they're open. So caller number 4, Guess Who, tickets headed your way.
Jeff Poore back on FM Talk 106.5. We'll look at that lineup that he's got on the way. morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 on Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. And up next, Jeff Forshaw.
He's back.
Back Daddy Jeff.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy Jeff.
And he's got GOP Chairman John Wall. Also, that's at 9:35. 10:05, ladies and gentlemen, Scarlett Johansson. No, Katie Britt. U.S. Senator Katie Britt, who was played by Scarlett Johansson on Saturday Night Live the other night. Former Alabama quarterback, of course, Brody Croyle, House Majority Leader Scott Stadhagen. And that'll be at 10:35, see what that's all about. And AL2 GOP hopeful leader right now, Dick Brubaker. There's the Jeff Poor Show for you from 9 o'clock and the 9:30 lineup through 11:35.
That 10 o'clock hour goes from Britt to Brody.
Yep,
wow.
It does.
Wow, big hour for Crimson Tide fans.
Star power.
Star power, that's right. So Pete texted in, China's after our youth and they almost have them. Their cultural attack is working because Rob laughs it off. And this, we're talking about this TikTok thing and what Rob was saying, and I do agree with him, and a lot of the people that voted no on this bill. Now, let me be clear. I have no idea what I think about this particular TikTok bill that passed the House. I mean, you had all the moderates vote yes for it yesterday. All the no votes came from both the left and the right. You had from the left, Jamal Bowman, Mr. Fire Hazard himself, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, Ayanna Pressley, they voted no. So I would think, well, that sounds like a good bill to me. But then you look at the other side, and it's Andy Biggs, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Nancy Mace, Thomas Massey, and then from Alabama, the only congressman to vote no.
Let me guess.
Go ahead.
Barry Moore.
Barry Moore voted no. And so then you look at them, and you're like, well, maybe they have a point. So I mentioned earlier this week, and one of the things that keeps coming up is why specifically TikTok? Why are they in such a push to legislate and get China to sell off TikTok to what's looking right now? I saw from earlier, Steve Mnuchin, the former Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin's putting together a company, an investor group, to maybe buy TikTok if this goes through. Hmm. So do you trust Mnuchin? I don't. But what the Congress wants, what the Biden administration wants in this bill, is it just that they're worried about the Chinese influence, or is it more than that? And a lot of people are saying, hey, they didn't do anything when China was buying up all this farmland. States have done stuff, but not federal government. They haven't done anything about, they're just now getting around to the ports where we have Chinese cranes that have cameras on them. They're getting around to switching all of that out. But why such the push for TikTok? And Vivek Ramaswamy, he called TikTok at one time digital fentanyl. But then he comes out and says he doesn't like this bill. Well, he kind of explained himself here. I'll try to play some of this. This is Vivek Ramaswamy on with Benny Johnson explaining his take. I think it's interesting. Let's see if we can get the audio going here. You got me turned up there?
Got it turned up.
All right, let's try it again. And we have completely lost audio. So I've got Vivek. Anyway, so Vivek starts it by saying that he thinks there are major problems with TikTok, and he lists them off one after three, and one is obviously the Chinese influence on the youth. He said it clearly for those under 18 has a major effect on their mental ability or whatever, the things they're into, and that it's China that's a problem. But he looks at this as maybe a First Amendment issue, much the same way that this Sean Davis did, who said this TikTok bill is so broad and poorly drafted that it will absolutely be used to shut down media that the U.S. government doesn't like. And we've already been through this. Remember, even just the New York Post, when they published what was a factual article about Hunter Biden and the laptop that was dropped off, you don't think the left wanted to just completely do away with the New York Post forever? They tried their best. They knocked them off of Twitter, knocked them off of, I think, even Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's a legitimate concern for sure. And so it's interesting you say was it Vivek or somebody said that the thing is written poorly, the bill is written poorly. Mm-hmm. So I haven't...
It's poorly drafted, they said. They said, just like the Patriot Act was used to spy on innocent Americans who hadn't done anything wrong. They mentioned the New York Post here and then says, remember how the same corrupt intel community fabricated and spread the Russia collusion hoax? Now, its minions accused anyone who accurately reported on the hoax of being Russian stooges. The language of this TikTok bill would give those same crooks and liars the authority to shut down and criminally prosecute and penalize media outlets by merely accusing them of being, quote, subject to the direction of an adversary. And Elon Musk, of course, also against this bill. He said the law is not just about TikTok. It's about censorship and government control. If it were just about TikTok, it would only cite foreign control as the issue, but it does not. So there's layers to this. I know there's, we talked about the GOP donor, Yass, who has a $31 billion stake in TikTok.
Right.
He's clearly putting his money into many of the Republicans who were initially against TikTok. So, like I said, there's layers to this.
Yeah, there's influence all the way around.
I don't think it's as cut and dry, this particular bill, as saying, hey, China has outsized influence on our youth through this app. They're trying to broaden that.
Yeah, and the count on that was pretty substantial.
Yeah, it was about 352 to 65. Yeah. It passed.
In the House. It's Dan and Dalton, and Jeff Porch Show is straight ahead.